Blog Talk Radio.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
Wow, that is enough for everybody. My name is Reverend Edward Pinckney. I'm the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I tell you, I'm excited about today's show. We have my dear brother Larry Pinckney on the line, and we also have Ralph Point on the line. We want people to know that we're moving forward with the things that we need to do to make this thing right. Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I am, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I just want to give everybody a little taste of Mr. Martin Luther King because I felt it was appropriate for us to hear him today, and especially what we're going to be talking about. Today we're going to dedicate our show to Len Stewart, and I'm talking to a man who knows Len Stewart. And also we have her husband on the line. I know he's somewhere around. I know he's close, and I want him to know that I want to apologize to him about last week. We couldn't get him on. It was something wrong with my computer, or it was something that was going on that we couldn't actually say. But, Larry, talk a little bit about Len for us right fast before we bring Ralph on.
All right. Well, I'll try to be as short and, you know, succinct as possible. Let me just begin by my brother by pointing out that Len has for many, many years stood up as the people's lawyer. And I use these words very, very specifically when I say people's lawyer. She defended those who could not defend themselves. She stood up for people who, and defended them, I mean quite well too, very well indeed, against bogus, trumped up charges of political natures, and even frankly charges that may or may not have been blatantly political, but nevertheless were political in the sense that these charges were brought against people who clearly were incapable of defending themselves by a very, very racist, capitalist system, which we still find ourselves unfortunately having to deal with today. Len Stewart in New York defended many, many people. She defended the Black Panther Party members or members of the Black Panther Party. She defended members of the Black Liberation Movement. She defended whites. She defended La Raza, that is to say brown folks. She defended women. She defended men. She dared to tell the government openly, publicly, that the government is behind setting up, that is to say, framing people for its own despicable purposes. In other words, framing and discrediting. If people know anything about COINTELPRO, COINTELPRO, which stands for the Counterintelligence Program, which was a program to frame, to imprison, to discredit, and in many cases to murder political activists who and dissenters in this country. And by the way, this program has now been codified. In other words, it is now a part, essentially, of what is now known as the so-called Patriot Act, which is anything but patriotism. But anyway, Len Stewart stood up when so many others refused to do so or were frightened. She was targeted herself by the so-called Justice Department of the United States, which is really the Injustice Department of the United States. She was targeted by the DOJ, Department of Justice, really to be neutralized, as which is a word that was used a lot and still is, I'm quite sure, by government authorities. And by neutralized, it means what I just said, to be imprisoned, to be discredited, et cetera, et cetera. And this is because Len Stewart had the audacity to be a white woman. Let me say that again. Had the audacity to, as a white woman, be defending not only black people, brown people, white people, but every kind of person you can imagine, and to defend them very vigorously, and she had the unmitigated audacity to point the finger at where it should be pointed, which is at the government and filthy corporations and this government, okay, that engages in subterfuge, as with her last major client. She was pointing out that the government, in fact, and I'm sure her husband Ralph will make reference to this, but that the government itself, in fact, was, along with the Zionist Israeli intelligence organization known as Mossad, M-O-S-S-A-D, but the U.S. government and Mossad were very deeply involved in framing her client. And when I say U.S. government, I mean NSA, CIA, FBI, the whole nine yards, not to mention the Department of so-called justice. So Lynn was viewed and still is viewed by the establishment as dangerous because she had the nerve to tell the truth, to speak truth to power. She had the nerve, the audacity, the integrity to say, wait a minute, this is wrong. This is not only something that is affecting my client, in this case, as a lawyer, as an attorney, a people's lawyer, that she understood that it wasn't just about her client, but it was about all the people in this country, all the people whose constitutional rights have been just shredded, and that includes shredded under this despicable Barack Obama, who is very, very active in shredding the Constitution while pretending with his sickly smile that he cares about the people. By the way, folks, you know that Obama just sold one of his vacation homes in Hawaii for $6.9 million. Just thought I'd throw that in. How about that for a so-called community activist, huh? But anyway, the reality is that Lynn Stewart is, as I wrote about her in the Black Commentator, which is at www.blackcommentator.com, I refer to her repeatedly as the people's lawyer, not a corporate lawyer, okay? Not a lawyer who can be bought out. She reminds me in many respects of another woman who happens to be a black woman, and that is the late, great Shirley Chisholm. Unbought, unsold, that's Lynn Stewart. She, being a white woman, precisely the same, however, she is unbought, she is unsold, and she is determined. So we have to be in very, very strong support of this woman who, over 40 years, well over 40 years, has been standing up in the courtrooms and in the streets. Not just the courtrooms, but in the streets. She has defended us. She has stood tall for us. We must defend her and stand tall for her, because in so doing, we are defending ourselves and standing tall for ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, that
well said. Well said,
very,
Larry.
Yeah, very well said. I tell you, I don't think there's nothing else I could say to add to that, Larry. But let's let Ralph come in. And, Ralph, I want you to come in and put the icing on the cake here. Tell us a little bit more about your wife, Lynn Stewart.
Great to talk to you gentlemen again. I listened last week, and I took notes. And I could hear, but I couldn't get in. It was
trouble getting you in. When I got you in, you wasn't there, and I thought I had you. My computer was going haywire.
No need. We're in a technological, as Lynn said, it's hard to imagine in this highly technological age that we have that anybody could silence her. But there she sits in jail with 10 minutes a day to talk on the phone. No recordings. She can't do it on Mumia. They'll only let their media in. And I was just thinking about that. They have managed to silence her because they needed to silence her. And when the resentence, get this, once she was found guilty of making a press release, She made a press release regarding her client, mm-hmm. and I'm going to get back to that. Once she was found guilty of making a press release, and they sentenced her to 28 months and took her law license, then they resentenced her because the Second Circuit said, even after she was found guilty and sentenced, she continued going around the country, speaking in law schools, speaking in universities, speaking in groups, challenging the courts on her position of the First Amendment, or freedom of speech. And it is an interesting thing. As she went around the country, she challenged people to argue with her about, or debate her on the First Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Seventh Amendment, right to an attorney. No one would challenge her. But what the Second Circuit said, that's after you lose and you take an appeal, what they had said was she continues corrupting our youth. Mm. And I was just thinking of last week's program, you know, when you were talking about Jesus the activist, sedition, spoke truth. And I'm saying, yes, you can get in trouble when you start talking truth when the empire is around. And I was thinking of Muhammad, you know, when the people were going to the places of worship yearly, to Ramadan and all, and he was speaking to the followers of Allah, the people there says, you know, wait a minute, you're messing up business, Muhammad. So we find that these people who speak truth to power are always in trouble. Their words get them in trouble because their words are powerful. And if you can say words in a manner that people can hear and understand, you become very dangerous. And they have to put you in jail. And as I said to Reverend, be very careful. Larry, be very careful. Because when you speak truth to power, they do things to you. And as I was going along, I said, up close and personal with Lynn over these years, working, you know, doing political work, and, you know, you tend to lose a sense of how much is being done. And I look back, and she was one of the people who talked about the criminalized poor. And she would fight the left and say, look, you know, like, these aren't lumping. These are criminalized poor. You know, put in a position, no education, no proper food, no prenatal care, criminalized poor. Therefore, ending up with no job, only one industry to go to. And when they go to that industry, then they are talked down upon. You know, and as you brought up, Larry, capitalism is organized crime. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I could go on and on forever, and I'll go back to King's speech. Judge a person not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character, and we turned that on our heads. We turned that statement right around, and we jumped on, and we supported Obama, and 95% of black women, 85% of black men, you know, because of the color of his skin. He pimped the just emotions of black people, but we set ourselves up to be pimped by...
Well, they didn't know you what happened. They set us up to be pimped.
They set us up, and we went along.
They set us up because they knew that this is the way that we were going to act. Let me ask you a question. How did we get ourselves in this mess?
Well, one of the things I said was many years ago when Lynn was, you know, speaking around the country, she was invited to go to Europe and speak. And she says, well, you know, like, you're going to have to come with me. And I says, you know, Lynn, I've seen enough Europeans to last me many lifetimes, you know, and I don't have to go to Europe to see them. They came here. Uncle Willie, you know, everybody told him not to go down to the seashore to see the tall ships. But, you know, Uncle Willie didn't listen to anybody. And he went down to look at the tall ships, and I say, what a mess we're in now. You know, like, saw the tall ships, and they dragged us over here. And you know the rest of the story. And they've been doing it to us ever since. And I was listening to his King's speech, you know, freedom. You know, like, let it ring, my friend, how far does anybody dare dream that dream today? I think that if he were to get up and say that today, they would put him in jail.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Like,
no,
you know, from, you talk about Stone Mountain. No. We're going to have to fight these people. You talk about freedom of religion. Here we are in New York. They don't want to have the mosque built, you know, and they says because it's near sacred ground. And I says, well, let's. Everything, the core of all racism is the double standard. You don't want to build a mosque where some Muslims are reported to have committed a crime. Now, you notice I said that very tenderly. Supported to have committed a crime. We could go into what happened at the World Trade Center. But if we were to apply that standard where criminal activity was carried on by a class or a race, a religion, where would Christians be able to build anything?
Absolutely.
Imagine. You couldn't build anything.
Let me say this. When I was in and present, Ojibwe was the Indian sacred ground, and they used to march outside the prison, and I had never seen that happen before on state property because they said this was their property. They took this property from the Indians and made a prison out of it.
Right.
And they used to march and talk about it, and they always said, but they always take it. See, here's the thing. They take, and they take, and they take, and we allow them to do it. They're talking about that sacred ground. What's more sacred than a religious place? You see, what's more sacred than that? And they have done this for years and years and years, just taking things, and then when they want to complain about something, they use their corporate media.
Well, they corrupt us, you know, like just as your march pointed out. How many members do we have that look like us on the board over there in Benton Harbor, you know, like voting the other way? Because there was a time when they're raising in the sun, we had a morality, you know, like what happens to with a freedom denied, you know, does it? Well, they gave us a car. I remember you spoke over there in Detroit, Reverend, when they were talking about drum. They had the job. They had the car. What did the woman say? They used to take a cab from one block to the next and then tip the cab driver. Well, they didn't know what the money was. We have, our freedom was replaced by things, a car, a job. We stopped thinking about morality. We stopped thinking about education. We stopped thinking about the future. We had things. We didn't put them back. And now we look and say, what happened? We look at Detroit, and now I see they're going to have a march on Wall Street. This is the latest. And I'm saying, wait a minute. How about a march on Washington? Because those are the people who took the money and gave it to Wall Street. It's late going to Wall Street. And in talking about Wall Street, I understand now that we looked at 5 million foreclosures. Well, we passed that number. We're looking at 12 million foreclosures. Well, they're now projecting 20 million foreclosures. Where is the Democratic Party to stop foreclosures? Why don't they buy those mortgages up and keep people working? That's all they had to do. Buy those mortgages.
But his idea better than that. Why don't the people take a stand?
Hey,
if
that,
don't worry about. See, we when we worry about what the Democrats and the Republicans do, we know they're not going to do anything because they're all part of it. They're all getting a cut out of this. Why don't the people take a stand?
Yes,
why
they
don't
had
we take
they,
this thing to a whole.
They had
level?
The lady stand up, the 70-year-old lady who owned her home, and she made a loan on her home, and they're going to lose it. And I said, well, gee, there were 10,000 people in the street. Go to her home when they come to put it out and say no. Don't have to go to Washington for that. Freedom is just as you say. It's not down at City Hall. Freedom is where you take it. And and here we have a Republican who states he wants to house the homeless in prisons. And after he says, after the great insult of housing them in prison and so-called keep giving them job training, he says, and teach them to take a bath. This is where he's coming from. You know, like they criminalize the poor and then say spiteful, hateful things. Take the land. And so we are in trouble. We have to pick some new leaders. And I will tell you, Reverend, you're on the way. You have said, why don't I do something? You're doing it. The people, we have to get out there and make sure you're the new leader. And we have to stop this nonsense of putting fools in office.
But
I was with some women.
Hold on for a second, Ralph. Let me say this to you. Mm-hmm. Here's a plan that could work around the country when it comes to foreclosures. When they evict you out of your apartment, you should come back that night and take everything and put it right back in that house. And if
yes, we used to
starts,
do that.
Remember, once they evict you and then you put the furniture back in the house, they have to go back to court to have you evicted again.
Yeah,
so,
you see, that ended, you know, like that was a big thing in the 30s, in the 20s. And I remember when I first came to New York in 1962, when they were, when people were fighting evictions. This was a strategy. We used to, you know, all night long, we had teams putting people back in their house. And one of the organizations, Feed the Homeless, they were doing that. And then there was this woman, I believe, in Akron, Ohio, or Cincinnati, who said, no more foreclosures. And the government passed another law. We have to stop being law abiding people. Unjust laws should not be obeyed. That's when the Fugitive Slave Act, that's the reason why that ended, because people refused to obey it. When the sheriff came to take the property, which was the slave himself, out of the community said no. And then so many sheriffs got killed trying to enforce the Fugitive Slave Act, that's when they abandoned it. They said, you can't enforce this act. And people now, when the government says something, they have these unjust laws, they have these criminal documents of the subprime loan, and I know it's hard for me to get off that subprime loan. We put the Democrats in. Barney Franks talked about it. Obama talked about it. Make the subprime loan illegal. No more charging poor twice the number amount of interest. And hasn't happened yet, Mr. Obama.
You know, and that will never end. Because
well,
remember,
you see,
this
yes,
will,
we have
remember this.
We have to end
by
it.
These banks.
That's right. We
you
have
see, to and why would a bank cut off his own hand or cut off the fingertips of his hand? Why
that's
would he do that?
Do. That's the government has to be for us, not for the banks. And
absolutely.
Everyone who stands up and says that gets cut down because we allow them to cut us down. We do not support the people who support us, and I think that's where you began the program. We must support those who support us. And
absolutely.
Then we must, like I said, we must point the finger back to us. We allow them to do these things because we have been corrupted. And we have to get away from our corruption. We have to say we believe in things. I heard so many people who say they believe in the dream of Martin Luther King. Well, we did a biggie this time. And, you know, like we jumped on Boo Boo Day. You know, we jumped on on Obama. And even though in the beginning, when he was starting to run, a no-no, and I say shame on us, when the Black Caucus, which I have no faith in whatsoever, when he went before the Black Caucus to get their support to run for president, they said to him, "Why didn't you ever join us in anything we were doing?" And I always use his exact words so that there'll be no confusion. He said he did not want to be tainted by that movement. So I'm saying, tainted. Fannie Lou Hamer just wanted to vote. That's it. He didn't want to be tainted. So I'm saying, now, if we think that we're being tainted by Fannie Lou Hamer, then what are we doing supporting this guy? They gave us trinkets and beads in the 60s and said, go home and be quiet, and we did. We had a great movement going. We took the trinkets and beads. We went home. We got quiet, and this is where we are now. We elect the guy who said he didn't want to be tainted by this. And I think of the story of Fannie Lou Hamer, the beatings these people took, thrown off the land for daring to go to a meeting to vote. That's not ancient history. We lived that. And this man didn't want to be tainted by that, but we voted for him anyway because the color of his skin. And I often think, and I'm still trying to get over that, and I'm saying, what happened to people? Did they think that by osmosis, that by having somebody who looked a little something like them, that they would be more accepted? Is this what drove people? And I'm still working on it. I'm puzzling my puzzler until it gets sore, trying to figure out what happened to us. You know, when people were screaming, I know, Larry, you were out there screaming. You were writing and saying, people, look, think, look before you leap. And
that's it. Hey, Ralph, Larry, let me ask you a question. When you think about Obama, do you think about Lynn?
Let me tell you. Let
me ask Larry that question.
When I think about Obama, I think not only in Lynn Stewart, I think about a person, and I'm talking about Lynn Stewart when I say a person.
Mm-hmm.
I think about a person who has stood up for the people for so many decades versus Obama, who is a character who has really been groomed by the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was. People, the information's out there.
Yeah.
That's who groomed Barack Obama, was the CIA, all right? And I think of a person who is essentially a sophisticated pimp of the people. He pimps black people, he pimps white people, he pimps brown people, he's an articulate pimp, all right? And so when I think of Barack Obama in the context of Lynn Stewart, I say to myself, my God, how could we have allowed such a devilish individual as Barack Obama to have what we did, brothers and sisters, is we betrayed ourselves.
Yeah.
We betrayed ourselves. That's why Sister Lynn Stewart and others, Leonard Peltier, Mumia Abdul-Jamal, I can go on and on. We have thousands and thousands of political prisoners in this country, contrary to the corporate stream. Corporate stream media myth, contrary to that. And those political prisoners are of all colors in the United States. So Obama perpetuates this. But go ahead.
But listen, we haven't saw nothing yet from Obama.
No.
This is, if he get another 4 years in there, which I don't see it, if he get another 4 years in there, all hell going to break loose.
No, I don't see it.
It's going to be too difficult for us to even think about surviving if he gets another 4 years. See, what he's doing now, he's just touching the water or testing the waters so people could think. See, because basically, I really don't think he's the president no way. He just got a title.
Well, yes, they all have
his opinion.
They all have just the title. But what he did is he dragged black people along with it, and therefore he stopped the movement. And I look at how black people, how unions have avoided to talk about Obama and the Democratic Party. They never want to talk about ending the war. And, you know, and they never talk about political prisoners. You know, the proud Puerto Rican people got their political prisoners out. I spoke at a memorial service for Lolita LeBron, and she's a very religious woman. And she says her religion would carry her, would strengthen her, and carry her to freedom. And before they went in, if anybody who doesn't know the name Lolita LeBron, she was a Puerto Rican woman and two men. They went to Congress in 1945 and shot it up. Had everybody ducking and dodging under the chairs and seats for the independence of Puerto Rico, for the movement in Puerto Rico. For anybody who didn't know where and what Puerto Rico was about, they woke up the nation and they fought. They have a movement. They had a movement for Puerto Rican independence for years. And they also went to jail. COINTELPRO, CIA, FBI, they were all in jail. But you couldn't get elected in a Puerto Rican district unless you were for freeing their prisoners, the people who fought for them. And in our country, in our communities, we don't even know the political prisoners. We don't know. And one of the things I said about Lynn, I told her, I says, you know, they're listening to you all the time. And before they said go to jail immediately, she was saying she was going to, wondering if she says, if I, a white woman, could go in front of the black churches and demand a pulpit, or if they say no, embarrass them, shame them, stand outside with other black women to say, hey, we have to talk about political prisoners. And I tell her to this day when I get a chance to visit her in jail, I says, you know, I keep thinking to that moment, why you had to go to jail instantly. Then, you know, when they do it differently, I says, they did it differently from Mumia. There's the Mumia exception. You know, the law applies to everybody but Mumia. And I says, now we have the Lynn exception. They change the law, sentence you, resentence you, give you terrorist treatment. It's so I says, this could well have been the thing, the turning thing, when you said, hey, we have to, there no movement can call themselves a movement and allow their political prisoners to languish. And she says, we have died, we are guilty. And I say, you know, this could have been the thing that just, you know, the final straw. She talked about, you know, is some of the black political prisoners say, some of the people who have worked the streets say, Lynn, you're not in jail because of that man with the turban and the sunglasses. You're in jail because of the work you've done for us for 30 years. You know,
right.
So I look now, it's 40 years. And, yeah, it's we cannot forget our political prisoners and Obama's CIA ties. You know, I didn't need to know that. All I needed to know is when he said he didn't want to be tainted by the civil rights movement, I said, shame on us. Shame on those congressmen who didn't stand up and say, you know, like, therefore you must go. Very few people talked about that, but that rung in my heart. Fannie Lou Hamer, all I could think about is sick and tired of being sick and tired. And they went through all of that just to get the vote, and we threw it away on Mr. Obama, who didn't want to be tainted by this movement. So, you know, it's I'm downhearted, and I also feel upbeat because the struggle continues.
That's
and
right.
I remember,
you know, Obama was born tainted.
That's right. His father.
When he was born, he was tainted. And he don't want to be associated with, he really don't want to be associated with black folks anyway.
Hey, Larry, give us something on a CIA background.
That's right. We went out and voted for this man, put this man in office. He did exactly nothing for the black race.
And
wow.
If we had even just read even his book, which is probably ghostwritten, the book, but, you know, Dreams of My Father or whatever it was called,
mm-hmm.
there's a portion in the book where Obama actually, and this was out before he was installed, before there was a so-called election in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a portion in the book, and it sickened me, but I had to read it. Okay, where he expresses his utmost contempt, for those brothers and sisters who were in the civil rights and or black power movement. Now, these are brothers and sisters who were lynched, who were falsely imprisoned, who were tortured, okay?
Yes.
These are brothers and sisters who gave their lives, their families, everything. These are people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, who stood up and who made it possible for that Negroidian Obama to even be born legally in this country. Because had he been born under the circumstances of the 1/10 of the Mississippi law, they would have said, you are, you know, anything but human. There is no such thing, okay, of black and white. I believe they call it miscegenation, okay? Sex between, let's be honest, okay?
Yes.
How dare that Negroidian not want to be tainted, not want to stand up. But, of course, we have to understand his background. We have to done a little research, not a lot, just a little bit of research to understand what this ooh, I don't even know what to call him, is about. And he's not just anti-black. He's anti-people, no matter what their color. And he's pro-corporate. He's pro-Obama, meaning he's pro-himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he can speak the King's English. Why? Because he wants to be the king.
That's
and
right.
I'll say to you what H. Rap Brown said in 1968. I said, Rap said, I'll fight just as hard against a black oppressor as a white oppressor or any oppressor of any color. And we need to regain what Dr. Martin Luther King said and what Malcolm said when they emphasized the character. Not the color, the character. And boy, do we have a character in the White House.
Yeah, his father worked for the CIA in Kenya, and his stepfather worked for the CIA in Hawaii and in Indonesia,
mm-hmm.
around there with the killing, the mass killing of Chinese, you know, like who were members.
1.5 million, Ralph. 1.5 million in Indonesia. But go ahead.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway,
let me ask y'all a question, a quick one. They're claiming that he was born in Hawaii, and they're claiming there is no birth certificate to prove it. Maybe y'all have some kind of clarification on that, because I know for a fact if someone born in a certain state, there is a birth record of it. I don't know. I'm not here to challenge that part, because to me it means very little. He's in there now.
Yeah,
you know,
we got him. And
yeah,
I would like to trade him for Sherrod, you know,
that's
a person,
right. But,
you know, who has character, who
right.
who
look,
was indignant, who was fighting for, you know, the land and the money. And let us understand, I'm saying the black farmer, still didn't get the money. They got the lawsuit they won, but Congress hasn't allotted the money. And therefore, they are out of business. And therefore, they are still going out of business. Second, and if this foreclosure goes, if these foreclosures continue,
they will
come to the amount of money second only to the loss of land after the Civil War, when after Reconstruction, and when blacks had land, were given land, we will lose that money second only to that period. And then we come up to the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, where the charade was fighting for those farmers to get the loans on the same basis as the white farmers, and they didn't get them, and they lost their land. They weren't able to compete. And there this Obama, his administration, it takes this lie and jumps and fires the woman, and she was so indignant, she says, no, you can't give me anything. I don't need anything.
Let me respond to what you had asked, Reverend Pinckney, about this whole Kenya thing and Hawaii thing as far as Obama's concerned. Let me just say that whether Obama was physically or biologically born in Kenya, which he might have been, or whether he was physically or biologically born in Hawaii, which he might have been, which is really kind of ridiculous that people don't even know where the president of the United States was really and truly born. Now, that in and of itself is ridiculous. But okay, let's push that aside. Let me say where Obama was truly born in terms of politically. He was born in the jaws of the CIA and the FBI. That's where Obama was born, whether it was in Hawaii or whether it was Kenya.
You could say the jaws of the beast.
That's right. That's where he was born, no matter where it was physically. That's where he was born. And if anybody remembers, and I go back to COINTELPRO, I'll be very quick, the counterintelligence program to frame, murder, set up, imprison, etc., political activists, dissenters in this country. It's very clear, and Ralph, you'll remember this. It was very clear in COINTELPRO where the counterintelligence program documents of the United States government made it crystal clear that there will be no, quote, Messiah, unquote, until they, who's they? United States government and corporations, until they create him, meaning a so-called black Messiah. And guess what, folks? You got him.
There it is.
Okay.
There it is. The books written by Ward Churchill just giving us all about COINTELPRO, how they operate. I think 23 books. He dissects it. He does the whole thing. Of course, they threw him out as a professor of indigenous history at the University of Colorado. Anybody who speaks truth to power, he documents what has happened in Gaza. He compares it to what has happened to the indigenous people in America. And he breaks it down so clear that their intent to kill them, to take, to usurp their land, to move them out and have another white settler nation in Israel. And as I say to people, white settler nations have a very poor record in terms of indigenous people. They wipe out.
Hey, Ralph, let me ask
Obama
you this one quick question. They're saying that the Jewish people run this country.
No.
And what? Also runs Obama.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying.
But this is what they're saying. The people say that the Jewish people, you're not saying that, but this is what I've heard many, many, many times, that the Jewish people run this country and run Obama. They said they tells him what he can do and what he can't do.
Let me say this real quick. Who runs the country are the corporations, is the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, and the Zionists. Now, there is a difference, okay? Because every Jew is not a Zionist, just like every German was not a Nazi, okay?
That's right.
So we need to make that distinction. But absolutely, the Zionists which is a political ideology, contrary to what the corporate stream media tells you. It has nothing to do with the Bible. It has nothing to do with the Torah. It has nothing to do with Quran. It's a political ideology like the manifest destiny, okay? The Zionists have an inordinate amount of power and control over the media, over the politics, over the policies of this country. One of the groups that Obama had to pass, okay, in order to be the devil that he is today as president, was AIPAC. What is AIPAC? That's A-I-P-A-C. It is the most powerful, okay, political action committee, which controls, okay, I call it the corporate committee, and it is Zionist. Every politician on the national level and many times the local levels as well must go through AIPAC. So, yes, Zionists do have an inordinate amount of influence and control, just like Mossad, the Israeli intelligence and murdering agency, works with the CIA, FBI, NSA, etc., okay, even against the interests of this country, believe it or not, but it doesn't matter, but they're Zionists. Let's not confuse Zionists with Jews. Every Jew is not a Zionist. Okay, just like every German was not a Nazi.
Very good.
Obama said, you know, like the Zionist Project Israel, as Obama said recently, in the last week, he wants to start the peace talks. Well, can you imagine? They're killing people every day. It's a camp. It's a killing camp, Gaza is. And he said wants to restart the peace talks, but the security of Israel must be protected, defended. That so therefore, you know, how can you defend the security of a people, of a country that's destined, that plans to wipe out another and say their security must be guaranteed no matter what plan comes out of it. That means the end of the Palestinians, the end of Palestine. And now, and they have their eyes on Iran. And understand this. You know, people forget, you know, how powerful is that oil? The oil in Iran was the basis for the economy of England and the British Empire up until the Ayatollah.
And people also forget that it was the United States CIA and British intelligence who did what in 1953 when the Iranian people democratically elected their leader? They overthrew the government. Democratically elected government. Let us understand that.
And what did he want? He wanted 11 cents on the dollar instead of 9 cents, and they killed him and put the Shah, his son, caretaker government. And this is what happens when you're dealing with America. But you see, one of the things was that we never dealt with the class issue among black people. And we never dealt with the issue of whether we wanted, yes, we did. We dealt with the issue. We wanted to become a part of the empire without changing it.
Mm-hmm.
We morally.
And here's the thing. We still want to be part of the empire.
Yeah, and we have to change it. See, now we have to.
Hey, let me say this. We only got about 6 minutes left. I want each one of y'all to take about 2 minutes apiece, and let's talk a little bit more about Lynn. Whatever your heart desire, whatever you want the people to know in reference to Lynn, we'll go there. Larry, I want you to go first, then Raph, you clean it up.
Okay. Well, in reference to Lynn Stewart, let me say that it is the obligation, and I repeat, the obligation of all people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, male and female, to stand with this sister. It is the obligation to understand, even if you do not know a lot about Lynn Stewart, you must at least know that she fought and fights for you, and that by imprisoning her, they are trying to imprison the very soul and spirit of people who are standing up and speaking truth to power. We must support Lynn Stewart. We must not let her be forgotten. We must not let her be alone. She has demonstrated that she is another Joe Hill. She is another John Brown. Check out who Joe Hill was, who John Brown was. That's what Lynn Stewart is. We must stand with her and for her because she is us and we are her.
Hey, well said, Larry. And we must also remember that she is the Dreyfus and Emile Zola of her time, the lawyer and the Dreyfus who was scapegoated for the French government, put on an island to die. And Emile Zola was the lawyer who fought to clear up, to clear his name, and to show it was treason in high places that put Dreyfus in jail. And Dreyfus was a Jew, and they scapegoated him. General, we'll talk about that at another time. But Lynn Stewart has been scapegoated because she is a voice for the people, a voice of the people. We must all write to the Bureau of Prisons to make sure that she gets sent to Danbury. And understand, we're still fighting. We're going to go back to the Second Circuit where she will have a 30-year exposure. That means that they could resentence her again to 30 years, and then we're going on to the Supreme Court, if so. So just keep Lynn in your heart, and I'm going to give you her address to write to. Lynne Stewart, Stewart, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, MCC, stands for Manhattan Correctional Center, 53504-054, 53504-054, Lynn Stewart, 150 Park Row, MCC, New York, New York, 10003.
That's beautiful.
Just write to Lynn. She's still got a fighting spirit. We'll be back in court. She's going to make an announcement in a day or two of the legal team we've put together, and we're going to go at them again.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you again, Reverend.
Y'all, anytime. You know, I have a dream myself.
Okay.
That we was going to, that one day, someday, that we're going to have some honest lawyers.
What do you think of that, Larry? What do you think? We are.
I all I wanted was to have just to know that there are at least one or two honest lawyers in this world, and Lynn Stewart was one of those. But you know, you dream about this all the time, and I know that people all over the country are saying, "Well, we have several honest lawyers somewhere." They don't know where they are. I don't know where they are. And that's why my dream turned into a nightmare, because the only person that I could think of who I would trust with my life at this time is Lynn Stewart.
Yeah.
And I believe that she deserved a better break than what she got. I know how government works. When they come after you, they're like pit bulls. They don't know how to quit until they have crippled you. But we the people of this country, we the people who love Lynn Stewart, it's time that we took a stand and take this thing to a whole different level. And it's something we can do. Because
we can.
You could be next. See, this is the thing that I say to folks. See, I have a dream. And I know for a fact if the people took a stand, things like that, this would not happen. If people say no more, this is almost like Nazi Germany. And they accused the Nazi Germans of being such terrible people. They're doing the same identical thing.
Worse.
They're not doing anything. Oh, absolutely. And what they're doing is wrong, but we have to tell them it's wrong. Until we open our mouth and tell these folks that it's wrong, until we sit down and say, we had a dream. I got a dream. And I believe this from my heart, that this is something that can be accomplished. But we have to show them. We have to either put up or shut up. Well, we sit around here and we be hollering about stuff, and we're hollering about reparations and all these things. Look, if you hollering about reparations,
I'm hollering about justice and freedom. We can merge together and become a force. You're fighting on this side of the fence. I'm on the other side of the fence. Then we're fighting with each other. I have a dream, and I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that things are going to be all right. Listen,
well, you're working on your dream, Reverend, and you're going to turn the scoundrels out where you are, and we're going to win.
I'm going to keep the pressure on them. And
great.
I want everybody to write to Lynn Stewart. Please write to her. Please write to her. Please write to Lynn Stewart. I have a dream. And
right on.
That time, we don't have no more time.
Well, thanks again, brothers. And
right on.
Anytime.
Everywhere. Love all of you.
Oh,
love
listen,
you too.
And Rap, I want to let you know that last week was a fluke.
I know. I was writing and writing, but, you know, like, we got time. We got time.
Yeah.
We'll do it again and again.
What we're going to do, we're going to keep moving and getting this thing right until we get it right.
Right on.
Okay? Listen,
okay.
Y'all,
all right.
Y'all, and y'all have a good day. Hey, here's something I want y'all to know, too. I'm having the NAACP Black Cat Freedom Fund dinner in October. Hey, even if y'all can't come, y'all might want to send a small donation. Because
great.
They're betting that I'm going to fail, that it's going to fail. And I'm putting a lot of time into this, and I'm trying to get other people to help me with this, and it's been real difficult, but I'm going to make it work whether they like it or not.
Okay, we'll talk during the week on the phone.
Okay, and then maybe we can send an email out, and I know how people feel about the NAACP, but I'm trying to bring the NAACP alive.
Okay.
Well, they don't say that about the Benton Harbor branch.
I know that's right. Y'all just trying to make me happy. Y'all stop acting like that. Don't you know people be listening?
I know, brother.
All right. And listen, I'm going to let y'all go. Y'all have a good day. Love y'all.
You too.
Let's stay focused and keep fighting.
God,
okay,
right.
Okay, brother. Stick and move. Watch your back. All
you
right.
You know it.
All right. Bye-bye.